Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're back at You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast at Radio MD or iHeart or wherever you pick our podcast up. For the 50 to 60,000 of you that get it every week, thanks very much. Please feel free to rate us. We love you to rate us. We have a great guest coming up this segment. This is segment 852B, the guest segment, if you will. And our guest, Dr. Bardia, who is a specialist in breast cancer at Mass General Hospital in Boston, the senior and corresponding author of a key study that has just come out on using circulating tumor cells to facilitate accurate diagnosis, therapy, and real-time monitoring of breast cancer. Dr. Bardia is from Mass General, and let's talk about the new advances in breast cancer. So, Dr. Bardia, if you will, breast cancer is not breast cancer is not breast cancer. There are many different, if you will, forms of it. Is that right?
That is correct. We increasingly understand that breast cancer is not one disease. The molecular makeup of breast cancer is different in different patients. And more the focus is to understand the molecular profile of an individual's breast cancer so we can use therapies that target that molecular profile.
So that's new. Molecular profiling means that it's really individualized to that individual cancer. Is that right?
Correct. And this is the philosophy of precision medicine, where the idea is understanding what drives a tumor so that you can do therapies to stop the tumor's growth. Now, broadly speaking, breast cancer at this time is divided into three major subtypes: hormone receptor positive breast cancer, HER2 positive breast cancer, and breast cancer that is neither hormone receptor positive nor HER2 positive, the so-called triple negative breast cancer. And that's a receptor-based classification, but there's also increasing understanding that not all hormone receptor positive breast cancers are the same, and so on and so forth.
Now, that means you're getting more and more specific. How, and consequently, obviously drugs have to keep costing more if they're not being used for broader groups of people. How do we bring this down to a reasonable cost for the therapy?
Yeah, it's a good point and is something that is being looked at, the so-called financial toxicity. In the past, we have had a lot of focus on adverse events related to, say, nausea or hair loss or drop in the white blood cells. But I think it's also important to consider financial toxicity. There's no easy solution. It's a point of big debate. But one thing to consider is that if we look at the molecular profile of a breast cancer, sometimes the molecular profile might match that of, say, ovarian cancer. And there is cross-applications of therapies. A good example would be PARP inhibitors. So PARP inhibitors are inhibitors that essentially prevent the ability of cells, particularly cancer cells, to repair the DNA. And PARP inhibitors are FDA-approved for ovarian cancer. But this year at our annual meeting at the American Society of Clinical Oncology meeting, we were quite impressed by the results of the use of PARP inhibitor in metastatic breast cancer. And it was a plenary session where the use of a PARP inhibitor was found to be much more superior than standard chemotherapy. So here's a nice example of a drug that was initially approved in ovarian cancer, but now will be used in breast cancer.
Now, let me go and ask a couple of specific questions about that. When you say it's now going to be able to be used, so we as physicians, you as a physician, could prescribe that without the FDA approval for use in this other cancer, because it's already an approved drug and you can give it your approval and prescribe it. On the other hand, the insurance company may not approve the charge for that because
Correct.
It is a unapproved use. How are you, how is the oncology community getting around that? Is it just by will, or is this a real problem?
Yeah, and what I meant by use is that I anticipate it would be FDA approved for this indication. Given that the results are so positive, the sponsor, you know, has filed the necessary paperwork, and I anticipate at some point, either later this year or next year, that drug would be specifically approved for breast cancer, and then it could be used. So what I meant by that it can be used in breast cancer, the indication is that it will get a label for use in breast cancer. So a drug that was initially approved for ovarian cancer would also get an FDA label for breast cancer.
Now, let me go and say it is clear from our discussion that Dr. Bardia is no amateur in breast cancer. So how do people get in touch with you if they want to get in touch with you for you giving care to them?
Yeah, absolutely. I would be happy to answer any questions, or if someone needs to be seen through our access nurse at Massachusetts General Hospital. There's a centralized system in terms of patient referrals as well as visits to the clinic. We also have started a dedicated clinic called the Precision, the Molecular and Precision Medicine Clinic. That is focused more on molecular profiling and targeted therapy based on molecular profiling.
And now the paper you authored or co-authored at the that was published online in July, called Clinical Management of Potential Toxicities and Drug Interactions. Tell us about that, would you?
Absolutely. So this was a paper looking at a class of drugs called CDK4/6 inhibitors, which are a class of drugs that affect the way the cell cycle moves forward. So the cells in a resting state are in a state called a G0 state, but before they can move into cell division, they have to make a transition from G1 to S, and that requires a certain checkpoint. And that checkpoint is governed by a class of proteins called CDK4/6. And what cancer cell does is that it jacks up that pathway, which essentially allows for the cancer cell to divide and proliferate. So a class of drug called CDK4/6 inhibitors block that pathway. And when that pathway gets blocked, the cancer cells cannot divide. And there are three CDK4/6 inhibitors, palbociclib or Ibrance, ribociclib or Kisqali, and abemaciclib, which have been developed in hormone receptor positive breast cancer. But these drugs have a unique set of side effects. So this article was focused on these class of drugs, how they work, the efficacy that's seen with these agents, but more importantly, also giving you focus on what are the anticipated side effects and how to manage them.
And now, this is really a breakthrough in a lot of cancers, as I understand, that is working on these checkpoint inhibitors or giving checkpoint inhibitors that stops the, if you will, the rapid proliferation of cells. Is that right? Or is breast cancer the first area it's being used in?
Yeah, so a couple of points. First, these inhibitors are the cyclin D4 and 6 inhibitors are being studied for other cancers as well, melanoma, lung cancer in combination with other agents. So very similar to the PARP example, this could be another example where the same drug is applied to other cancers. And Second, the checkpoint inhibitors are slightly different. The checkpoint inhibitors are more immunotherapy agents, which affect the PD-L1 and PD-1 pathway. And they essentially affect the ability of the immune system to attack cancer. And checkpoint inhibitors or PD-1 inhibitors are being studied for various cancers, melanoma, triple-negative breast cancer, subset of lung cancers. And all of this, again, emphasizes the point that, you know, cancer cells have certain pathways that get activated, and sometimes a pathway in a lung cancer could be the same as breast cancer, it could be the same as, say, melanoma, and if you use the drug that targets that pathway, it could have broad application.
So what this brings up is there's a vast excitement in cancer now that is allowing new drugs, new therapies, and new approaches to be used. How close are we to, one, being able to treat many of these cancers successfully, meaning getting more than 5-year survival rates out of them? And secondly, the question came in, are we close to a vaccine against a cancer?
So I think in terms of the first question, I think, you know, for some cancers, we are there for stage 1 or stage 2 breast cancer. The disease-free survival is in the range of more than 90%, the 5-year disease-free survival, and for other cancers as well. I think the challenge from a breast cancer perspective at this time is more metastatic disease, where patients have stage 4 disease or disease that is outside of the breast and in other organs. But even there, a lot of progress has been made with these CDK4/6 inhibitors, immunotherapy, other targeted therapies like mTOR inhibitors. So I think slowly the curve is moving, and we are moving in the direction of making even stage 4 metastatic disease more of a chronic disease. But there is no doubt that a lot of progress needs to be made before we feel that we've truly achieved success in metastatic breast cancer. Now, as far as the second question of vaccine, there are ongoing trials looking at vaccines alone or in combination with immunotherapy. So I would say that it's a very exciting area, but a lot of research needs to be done before it can be recommended as standard of care.
And the excitement in breast cancer, when we hear about breast cancer and its severity, women tend to fear breast cancer more than they fear cardiac disease or memory loss or some of the other things that are common. Are we getting through this area of breast cancer, and is there enough excitement that you think that we're going to be able to reassure women this isn't as big a problem as it was?
Yeah, I think so, especially for certain types of breast cancers at this time that are stage 1, for example. There was an interesting study that was published a couple of years ago, which looked at the risk of recurrence in patients who have stage 1 breast cancer and the risk of their dying, and compared that to cardiovascular disease, and found that approximately for 1/3 of women with early breast cancer, the risk of having cardiac problems and having morbidity and mortality from cardiac problems is higher than that of breast cancer recurrence. Just emphasizing the point that sometimes we tend to ignore the other comorbid illnesses that could cause more problems than the breast cancer. And there's already ongoing debate about the about stage 0 or DCIS as to what's the clinical importance of that subtype, and whether we need to pursue an aggressive management for that subtype.
So one of the – that brings up a question that we got from a listener on DCIS. She said, I thought I had DCIS and I had a local recurrence of it, meaning I don't think they took a wide enough margin. But now that's gone. Am I at risk of a metastatic disease coming back, or is DCIS never metastatic?
Yeah, in medicine, it's tough to say never because, you know, there are a number of factors that come into play. But conceptually, DCIS should not be associated with metastasis because by definition, you need an invasive cancer for it to metastasize. So conceptually, it would be very unusual for DCIS to have metastasis. And that's why, in general, for management of DCIS, if someone has had a mastectomy, we don't recommend additional treatments and so on and so forth.
So it is that DCIS may have a different, what we call biology, a different natural life span for the tumor than other forms of breast cancer.
That is correct.
Well, you've heard a lot of great information, and I've heard a lot of great information from our guest today. We've been listening to a real pro from Mass General Hospital, and you can get him on the access line. I guess that's the easiest way of getting a hold of you, Dr. Bardia, Bardia. Obviously a true pro in breast cancer. A lot of women worry they won't get early enough access, so there is an access line set up by Mass General so that you can get quick access to real pros like this in each disease. And we're really lucky that one of the great hospitals of the world, Mass General, has set that up and that Dr. Bardia is there. Any further comments, Dr. Bardia, before I thank you from the heart of you, the Owner's Manual podcast listeners?
You know, this was great. I would just like to add one additional comment based on circulating tumor cells that you had mentioned earlier. You know, we were talking about these breast cancer subtypes, but we are also realizing that the subtypes might change over time. That someone who has a certain subtype in response to therapies or just tumor evolution, it could change. And we recently described how a tumor that is hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative, could become HER2 positive in the blood by analysis of circulating tumor cells. So the point is that there's a lot of excitement about understanding tumor biology and using targeted therapies that are specific to the molecular profile of the cancer, and I'm really excited about the research that's ongoing.
Wow. I didn't realize that the biology can evolve that much, because that really means that you've got to stay, that a five-year survival could, in fact, change over time.
It potentially could. And I think the point is also about tracking the tumor. If we can track the tumor and understand how it changes, then you can use therapy. So therapy that might be successful, say, 10 years ago might not be successful now for the same tumor if the tumor evolves over time.
And let me just ask you one last question, if I can, and apologize for keeping you so long. So if the – you can – is this likely that we'll be able to follow such tumor biology in circulating cells, meaning from a peripheral blood sample?
Yeah, and absolutely. And it's not ready for clinical application by any means at this time. But from a research perspective, that is where there's a lot of interest to see if you can develop, if you will, the blood test for detection of cancer, so that based on a blood specimen, you could detect circulating tumor cells or circulating tumor cell fragments, and precisely to do that.
Wow. So now you've gotten to share some of the excitement that Dr. Bardia and those of us in medicine feel when we say, wow. I can tell you that the aging field That is, my area of research is advancing just as fast and just as wildly as the breast cancer field, and that's why there is so much both hope and understanding that all of us, that just as we're changing our technology, we may be changing our medicine just as fast. Dr. Bardia, thanks very much for bringing those insights and that excitement to us.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you. You've been listening to You, the Owner's Manual podcast on iHeart or Radio MD or wherever you listen to it. Keep downloading. Keep rating us. We appreciate that. We'll be back next week. We have another sensational guest lined up for you, as well as the top medical news of the week.